Podcast today's show at rte.ie/todaywithseanorourke.
Has William T. Cosgrave, W.T. Cosgrave, been unfairly relegated to the footnotes of Irish history? That's a question I am about to put to historian Michael Laffam. He's here to discuss the life and legacy of the first leader of the Irish Free State, the subject of his latest book, Judging W.T. Cosgrave. And it was published last night it was launched last night in the presence of the Taoiseach and indeed the former Taoiseach, Liam T. Cosgrave, son of the aforementioned W.T. Michael Laffam, thank you very much indeed for coming to studio. Tell us a little bit about this man. He was the first leader of this state at a very difficult time.
A very difficult time. He took over from Collins when Collins was killed during the Civil War. It was a bloody, savage period in Irish history. He was a man who never expected to reach that position. He'd always been a number two in the background. He hadn't been involved in the treaty discussions, for example. But he was a good, steady pair of hands. He was Collins's effective deputy while Collins was running the military campaign. And when Collins was killed, he took over almost automatically. And he was, despite a deserved reputation as a mild and gentle man, he proved to be a very tough war leader in the Civil War.
We'll hear about that in a little more detail in a few minutes. But what was his background? Born and reared in Dublin, left school at an early age?
He left school at 14 and a half, educated by the Christian Brothers. But it was normal for somebody in his background to leave at 14, 15. He then joined the family business. His father had died when he was young. His mother and stepfather ran a pub in James's Street, and he became the manager. And for 20 years, he managed the pub. But from that, he moved into local politics and became a councillor in Dublin Corporation. And with the Sinn Féin party.
Yeah, he was doing that almost for 10 years or more,
yes,
before being thrust into government.
That's right. He became a prominent member of the corporation. He was, even though he belonged to a very small minority party in it, he chaired its most important committee, finance. He was good at sums. He was good at figures. And that gave him a training for managing the finances of the country later on. And then in 1913, he joined the Irish Volunteers. And then his career took a very, very different direction.
How active, or was he active in 1916 and in the period around then?
He was very active. He was a prominent member of Eamon Cant's battalion that took over the South Dublin Union, now St James's Hospital. His brother was killed, shot dead by a sniper. He himself was described as dashing under fire from one outpost to another. And he was so prominent that after the surrender, he was sentenced to death.
And, well, like a lot of others, he survived that.
Like a lot of others, he survived because 90 of them were sentenced to death, but only 15 executions took place. So he was one of the lucky 75. Life imprisonment was the alternative. But fortunately for him and all the others, life lasted just a year. And then they're all let go.
So prior to the split, prior to the Civil War, where did he stand, say, vis-a-vis De Valera and Collins? You said, for instance, he wasn't in on the whole treaty talks.
No, he was one of the cabinet ministers who stayed behind. Three ministers, Griffith, Collins and Barton, went to London. The other four, including Dev and Cosgrave, stayed behind. So he was often out of key decisions like that. But De Valera regarded Cosgrave as a good, solid, reliable ally. And it seems it was only after the treaty was signed that De Valera realised, I can't trust this man anymore. He's not necessarily on my side. And when it came to the crunch vote, the seven members of the cabinet voted on the treaty and four of them voted for. And the key swing vote, the one person who hadn't been a member of the delegation in London, the key swing vote was Cosgrave's.
And that seems to have taken Dev by surprise.
It did take him by surprise. And Cosgrave remarked later of Dev, he thought he had me in his pocket.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that relationship or lack of relationship perhaps in a few minutes, Michael. But it wasn't just Collins who died. Like within, I think 10 days, Griffith had died as well.
Yes.
So here was a guy catapulted to the place of foremost responsibility because there had been the split. De Valera was outside of government at that stage. So how did he set about running the show?
He set about running the show in a consensual manner. He was, in Brian Farrell's terms, a chairman, not a chief. He wasn't a dominant figure as Collins had been, or as De Valera would be. He believed in teamwork. He was the leader, but not the dominant figure. And he was on minor issues, prepared to be outvoted in his cabinet. And there's one minute saying a decision was taken, the president, that is Cosgrave, dissenting. So he was a leader of a team, but he was, in the Civil War, a very tough leader.
Let's hear about that now, because there's an extract coming up of an interview that my colleague David McCullough has done in the last few days with W.T. Cosgrave's son, the former Taoiseach Liam Cosgrave. And here Liam Cosgrave is asked whether his father would have regretted some of the security measures introduced during the Civil War.
During the Civil War, the government had to bring in very harsh measures. Do you think your father ever regretted any of that?
I wouldn't think so. He always said, if you're attacked, you have to repel it. And they did. Of course, they had to take very stern measures. Remember, one TD had been shot and another wounded. And threats were issued. It was issued under the name of originally Liam Lynch, that TDs, ministers, judges, so on, are all to be regarded as legitimate targets. Well, you can't fight a war and have one side allowed to do what they like. Of course, there was a considerable resentment to the action they took, but no more TDs were shot. I think there might have been another signature with Lynch, but I was never able to find it. It might have been done in invisible ink.
And whose signature do you think that was?
Oh, I'll leave it alone.
That's Liam Cosgrave. I think he's aged about 94.
That's right.
Now, Michael. Yeah. Do you know who he's referring to there with the invisible ink?
De Valera.
He spelled it out there for us. And again, making no apologies for father and son, the will of the people. They had backed the treaty, essentially, and therefore it was going to, its writ would run.
Yes, his line was absolutely clear and determined. The people want this treaty. It has been voted by the Dáil. Public opinion is massively on our side, and there he was perfectly right, as the election that took place the following June showed. So we, he said, we, the government, are responsible to the people. We will abandon power, we will give up if the people so decide, but only if the people decide that.
And he was prepared to kill a lot more than four if it
came. He said, we will kill thousands if necessary. The millions of people of Ireland matter more than 1,000 or 2,000. They didn't need to do anything like that, but he was absolutely determined that we will shoot as many people as are necessary to end this war, so that there will be a government in charge at the end of the war, responsible to the people and ready to hand over.
Let's hear a little more from Liam T. Cosgrave. This is his assessment of his father's government.
That was a very successful government. In fact, I would have no hesitation saying, faced with the difficulties, it was the most effective government in the state ever had. Remember, there was no outside money. All the money had to be provided from revenue. And of course, revenue wasn't big. And great reluctance to pay in some places. And then a lot of damage done, bridges and roads and so on. But still, they got through it and then launched a very successful economic program. Considering the problems after the First World War with prices dropping and so on.
Austerity, as we see it now, it is as nothing compared to what that generation endured.
Yes, because as Liam Cosgrave has said, it was a time of depression internationally. There were two different slumps in the 1920s during Cosgrave's time in office. There was the legacy of the Civil War, the massive destruction. There was the problem of demobilising a bloated army that was necessary for the war but was totally inappropriate to peacetime circumstances. And of course, there was the ideology of the time. I mean, people now are inclined to criticise Cosgrave and his government, and even De Valera afterwards, for not adopting Keynesian policies. But we shouldn't forget that Keynes himself hadn't developed Keynesian ideas in the 1920s. That came only much later in the 30s. So there was a feeling shared by Cosgrave and almost everybody in the government that budgets must balance, that we cannot afford debt.
But he had a finance minister, did he not, who did something in that era which has haunted every minister for finance since?
Yes, Ernest Blythe, his minister for finance, cut the old age pension. But by European standards, the Irish old age pension was remarkably generous. And we shouldn't forget Ireland's demographic pattern, with a far larger percentage of old people than was the case in Britain or continental European countries. It was unwise and it was undone, but it has haunted politicians and ministers for finance, as you say, ever since.
Even more recently, the folklore has it, at the time, at the start of the current crash, the late Brian Lenihan walked into that meeting room in the Department of Finance where on the walls are pictures of all of his predecessors, and he pointed up to Blythe and he says, "I'm not going there." And signs on, no government would dare do something like that ever since.
It was very bad PR. But one thing to remember about the Cosgrave government is that they weren't particularly concerned about PR. They took the view, we're not going to give the people what they want. Certainly not. We'll give them what's good for them.
Now, what about the relationship, or lack of, with De Valera, Cosgrave and De Valera?
It very quickly became poisonous. They hated each other. Cosgrave and others too on the pro-treaty side regarded Dev as the man responsible for the Civil War. He wasn't, but that's how they saw him.
And nevertheless, though, he had a good relationship with Lamass, apparently.
Yes, but that was totally different. Lamass was a different generation. Lamass wasn't involved in any serious way in the Civil War. There was no question of blaming Lamass. And also, Cosgrave and Lamass were in many ways kindred spirits. They were practical, down-to-earth people. I mean, Cosgrave always described himself as a businessman.
We'll leave it there. Michael Laffin, author of Judging W.T. Cosgrave, a book with wonderful illustrations produced by the IRA. Sorry, by the RIA, I should say. Unfortunate slip of the tongue there. Back with more after these.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.